The odd numbers. Psalm 85. Lord, you have been favorable to your land. You have brought back the captivity of Jacob. You have forgiven the iniquity of your people. You have covered all their sin. You have taken away all your wrath. You have turned from the fierceness of your anger. Restore us, O God, of our salvation, and cause your anger toward us to cease. Will you be angry with us forever? Will you prolong your anger to all generations? Will you not revive us again, that your people may rejoice in you? Show us your mercy, Lord, and grant us your salvation. I will hear what God the Lord will speak, for he will speak peace to his people and his saints, but let them not turn back to folly. Surely his salvation is near to those who fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. Mercy and truth have met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven. Yes, the Lord will give what is, and the land will yield its increase. Everybody, righteousness will go before him and shall make his footsteps our paths. Yeah, Lord, we just really want to let your words soak into our lives. We want to understand how mercy and truth are met together and righteousness and peace kiss each other. And we want to participate in your kingdom. So minister to us, teach us in Jesus' name. Sit down and turn to John chapter 8. If you need a Bible, Debbie will get you one. Raise your hand. Yeah, I almost started just to read that whole psalm all the way through. I probably would have went into my own private prayer there and everything, but somehow I stopped. John chapter 8, the last time we were here is really, we were here last, let's see. I don't remember. Last week, last Sunday, was Easter Sunday, and I didn't do John chapter 8. And then 2 weeks when I wasn't here. So the last time is 4 weeks ago. I knew that earlier today. 4 weeks ago that we were in John chapter 8, and we read the first 11, 12 verses. This is after in the courtyards of the temple with many, many people around. And these men who brought this woman and cast her down in front of Jesus, we caught this woman in the act of adultery. They were the Pharisees, religious leaders, and there were other ones around as well as the common people. And when Jesus promptly dismissed them, he who is without sin among you cast the first stone. And they left from the eldest to the youngest, the ones who were accusing. Not everybody left, not all the Pharisees left, not all the Sadducees left, all the religious leaders, and certainly not the people in general. And he says these words in verse 12, as there's crowds and others of these leaders who were already in the temple courts, he spoke to them saying in verse 12, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. The Pharisees therefore said to him, you bear witness of yourself. Your witness is not true. Jesus answered and said to them, even if I bear witness of myself, my witness is true, for I know where I came from and where I am going, but you do not know where I come from and where I'm going. You judge according to the flesh. I judge no one. And yet if I do judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I am with the Father who sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one who bears witness of myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness of me. They said to him, where is your Father? Jesus answered, you neither know me nor my Father. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. And these words Jesus spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple. And remember, in the temple is in the temple courts, and he's in the place where people bring in their offerings. So I am the light of the world. A further claim by Jesus, our Messiah, of deity. And God provided a pillar of fire in the wilderness for the Israel to wander by night. That psalm we read talked about their disobedience and God's anger. This was after they entered the promised land, and then they turned away to worship idols and were chased out of the land in 587 BC from Jerusalem. That psalm is referring to these things. or is referring to also earlier times of disobedience, such as in the wilderness. And the Jewish thought, though, about not just the pillar of fire, how God brought light at night and led them, but the thought of a Jewish thought is that God is pure light. That's a very common Jewish theological thought process they get from the scriptures. And Jesus boldly proclaims, not, I am a light. Because a lot of people, we say about someone, he's a real light at his workplace, don't we? She's a real light in that club she's in or in that community. Jesus didn't claim to be a light. This is important. His words are important. The Gospel of John is filled with the communication of God through Jesus' own words, and we take it slowly and carefully because why would you miss anything in it? So we may be tedious, but for a very good reason. I am not a light, but the light of the world. Who would dare say such a thing? Well, the same one who said earlier in his first I am in John of 8, I of 7, I am the bread of life. I am the bread that came down from heaven to give life to the world in John chapter 6, which we read earlier. You see, the question of who Jesus is and what he claimed to be is answered fairly rapidly in the Gospel of John, as well as other places. Now, when unscrupulous people have been accused of a crime, when bad guys get, arrested or accused of a crime, they take typically three options, unscrupulous people do. One is they threaten the person, the witness that saw them, that's going to testify against them. Or they eliminate the witness. So they threaten or test or eliminate the witness against them. Number two, if they can't do that, they try to discredit the witness. You know, go into their past and find something that shows them to be flaky or whatever. If that doesn't work, number three, they use their slick lawyers to try to bring their testimony into question on a technicality. Have it thrown out because of a technicality. No doubt you've seen some story in the news about somebody who clearly committed a crime, but they got off because of a technicality and it made your blood boil. So they will try to find some way to discredit the testimony technically because of some technicality. Now, these Pharisees and scribes and leaders who hated Jesus tried the first two already. They tried to have him arrested. Nope, that didn't work. They brought the woman in adultery, tried to discredit his testimony by getting him stuck. Nope, that didn't work. Now they're working on the technical side, a technicality. You're not bringing a proper introduction of your witness. And it is true that Deuteronomy 17 and Deuteronomy 19 talk about having two or more witnesses when you bring a case. One of them speaks specifically of the case of murder. It was most predominant that if there was a murder situation, you couldn't have somebody put to death without clear two persons or more witness, eyewitnesses, and those people had the first one to pick up a stone, as we've talked about earlier, to stone them. Well, not everything in the law required the exact same intensity, but the Pharisees and scribes, religious leaders, have through their history now used every possible loophole they could find and develop from these Old Testament verses to never account for anything if they didn't have two witnesses. They themselves would seek to escape through loopholes. And you can read about that information in commentaries on their history. But all Jesus said and did, every single thing Jesus said, everything Jesus did testified that he was the Messiah. People say, well, that guy, he just wants to believe so bad that he just believes. Have you ever, people said that about you? Well, maybe you just wanted to believe in Jesus so bad, you just believe it's true. And they'll say that about the gospel, of course, and about faith. And here's what's true. In some people, about many things, that's a true statement. Do you know anybody who just so badly wants to believe that somebody loves them who you know doesn't love them? They just believe they do, but they're being taken advantage of. Do you know anybody who just so badly wants to believe they're going to be a college point guard for, you know, for a basketball team, and they just don't have it? Should I go down a list of things people want to believe, and they want to believe that, you know, each and every day everything's getting better in every way? They want to believe that for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. Can you prove that? You see, it's not just Christianity. What I'm trying to express here is, do people sometimes want to believe so much that they convince themselves of things? You don't have to argue that point with people. Is that true? It's a general true statement. You're absolutely correct. That does happen. You know, but you know, sometimes that also includes sometimes people don't want to believe something so badly that they refuse to believe what is true. The same thing is true, the shoe on the other foot. Sometimes people so desperately do not want to believe. You know, I don't see it. I just don't see it. They don't want to believe. And those people, in many cases, and particularly in the case of faith that we're discussing here now, but it can go anywhere, they look for technicalities to dismiss what they know is true. Whether it's ancient times, here, or today, the human heart has not changed. Mankind is the same basic person. And some people, without reason not to believe, simply say, since it can't be proven, I don't have to deal with it. Convincing themselves that they don't have to deal with their Creator because nobody can prove it. But Jesus' verbal testimony and his actions, every single word, every single action of Jesus prove where his source is, where he came from. The claim to be God's Son from heaven to earth testified of the Father's heart, the Father's mind, and the Father's will, and he constantly verified everything, his work, in such a way that everything about Jesus said, case closed, Messiah. I don't feel a need and a responsibility to prove that to everyone. I have a deep desire to help whoever will listen, whoever wants to know, to guide them in that direction. I don't mean as some kind of Superman, but just as a Christian man, as a person who has heard from God and seen God and has had to face my own unwillingness to believe and looking for technicalities. Does not believe. You know, nonetheless, it's not my job to prove it. The case is closed, though. Jesus is the Messiah. And verse 15 and 16 that we already read, I'll read again. Very important. You judge according to the flesh, and I judge no one. And yet if I do judge, my judgment is true, for I'm not alone, but I'm with the Father who sent me. Some of these, as Jesus is speaking, they're not talking in the same manner that you and I would talk in a normal American way, and I know that. But it's a very important, simple thing here. You judge according to the flesh. He's not saying just based on not skin color, per se, or something like this, or how old or young somebody is, or how big their nose is or not. When he says you judge according to the flesh, any of those things could enter in. But he's saying you judge according to human reasoning, man's fallen nature has its own reasoning patterns, and you judge according to your five senses and to your frame of reference. And we would say, if we didn't know Christ, well, how else are we to make a decision if it's not by what we know and understand in our history, what we know in our minds, what we see in people that we can see, right? That's what a person would naturally say. We're not faulting people for having that attitude, because you would have that attitude. How else am I supposed to judge? And Jesus says, I judge no one. What's he saying there? Remember in John chapter 3 when he's talking to Nicodemus? God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world, people of the world, through him might be saved. This is the condemnation, that men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. You see, Jesus says, but even if I do judge, my judgment is true because I'm not here to condemn, I'm here to save. And the judgment will be the rejection of the truth and the light that you're being given. And if I do bring a judgment of clarity to you, if I do bring a standard to you, I'm not doing it on my own. I'm doing it from my Father in heaven. I come from above, you're from beneath. He's been saying these things. Now, Jesus never had to do what you and I have to do kind of on a regular basis, semi-regular basis, backtrack. You know, the famous backtracker in my history as a kid watching TV was none other than Ralph Cramden. Humma, 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 humma. You know, he's trying to backtrack, and after he's, oh, you know, blah, 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 and then Alice or some boss or somebody or even Ed Norton puts him in his place. Why did you do that, Ralph? Why did you say that? Humma, 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 humma. He's trying to fumble for words and regain his stand. Okay, so a poor picture to bring at a Bible study, admittedly, but it is in my history. It's my frame of reference. No, so listen, we have to backtrack. We have to retract statements. Gail and I have a physical thing we do when we think that we, or maybe somebody else, has just ignored so much information just to make some blatant statement that is just opinionated to the hilt. And just, I feel this way, so everything's this way. We just go like this, like there's a table there with stuff on it, and we go like this. Well, they just cleared the table, you know. You can use it if you want. You know, you and your mate or your friend, just when they're being real obstinate, just, you know, do that. It'll help the relationship. you know, but we have to backtrack, don't we? We have to retract statements we made because we misunderstood something. I mean, you could go outside and see an adult pounding on the back of a child and think that it's child abuse and call the police immediately, not knowing they're actually doing a different kind of Heimlich to get something out of their throat. You can misjudge a physical circumstance. You can see somebody come in late looking very disheveled and say, why do they do that? When it took you 5 minutes to get here from your house, but they had just walked for 3 hours because they were so desperate to get here. Who came further? Who should be honored more? Really, right? I'm not saying you personally do these things. I'm saying, but we all have this tendency to say things, think things, and have to retract because we misunderstood, misjudged a person or a circumstance. Jesus, we just love talking about Jesus. We love looking at Jesus. And as we behold him, it can help change us. It isn't just to flower him up with great words and impress him. It is part of praise. It is part of worship to talk about him and who he is. But let me tell you, when you talk about and think about who Jesus is, it slowly, steadily changes you. When we behold 2 Corinthians 3, his glory, as looking in a mirror, we're changed by that glory. So we're looking at Jesus as much as we can. We're not wasting time on stuff that doesn't matter. We're not just trying to do 10 reasons to have a better, more successful life. We want to see Jesus. That's our goal at ACF. If you don't come to any meetings about who we are, it's to see Jesus and to love Jesus without shame, without apology. God, help us more fall in love with him. And here's the thing. He never misspoke nor ever misunderstood a situation. You won't see Jesus going, well, I say this. Oh, sorry, Peter, I misunderstood you. You'll never see him anywhere in any relationship. And he was under pressure like you and I have never been under. And even under the greatest amount of pressure in his life, he never misjudged. He never misunderstood. He never misspoke. Kind of amazing. You could just stay on that for a few hours and just think about that. It's not a waste of time. We're not like that. God takes Samuel. Samuel was the one man of God really standing up rightly in a time of great disobedience and failure among God's people. And God says, Samuel, you're going to go to Jesse's